Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
I don't know, Brendan. Sometimes I think that we're in the prison and the prisoners are not.
Right. That's weird.
It's like the walls are keeping us out.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
Kind of.
We all live in our own prisons, Brendan.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all trapped in these bodies.
Yeah.
You have to go to school. That's a prison.
It's a prison.
I have to be a soccer coach.
It's a prison. It's conversation.
It's a prison.
It's a prison. Can't get out of it.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 126, week of August 15th, 2016. I am repeating background David T. Cole, and I'm here with Falling Anvil Sarah D. Bunting.
Tex Avery was here.
Tunt Eris Tara Ariano.
Phrasing.
And belligerent moon man Monty Ashley.
We smoke while we flip the bird.
Monty, I'm so happy you're back, if for no other reason than that. That delighted me so much.
Hooray!
Would have also accepted, that sounds like a personal problem. Anyway, welcome back to Monty Ashley, and welcome back to the Extra Hot Grape Podcast.
Yay!
After we took a week off, we are now back. And today, we are talking about adults watching cartoons. So cartoons made for adults, cartoons watched by adults, the experience of how those two kind of, the categories are sometimes blended, sometimes not. And we're going to go around the dial among the four of us and talk about cartoons in the adult space in several different categories. So why don't I start it off by throwing to Monty, our guest. Talk about our first area of discussion, which is your favorite cartoon series that no child must ever see. Monty.
I'm going to go with something that's currently on the air, or at least on the webs, BoJack Horseman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, on one hand, a delightful series about anthropomorphic animals, and it's full of stupid puns about those animals, but it's also really, really bleak and about depression, and you would not be shocked to see the main character attempt suicide in any given episode.
Oh my God.
Can I ask a I tried to watch the pilot whenever it was on a couple of years ago now, I guess,
yep.
And I couldn't get into it. Do you find, like, the show found its footing from the start, or whether it sort of grew into what everybody is enjoying about it now?
I had to push through the first 4 or 5 episodes.
Okay, all right.
Because at first it is just your typical purposely crudely drawn crude joke series. You're
right.
Thinking, oh, this could be anything. But in like the second or third episode from the end of season one, there's a scene where BoJack is alone in a spotlight asking a Q&A at a panel, and he just says, tell me I'm good. Please, I need you to tell me I'm a good person. Please, tell me I'm good. Tell me I'm good. Please, please, I'm begging you. Tell me I'm a good person. Tell me I'm good. And they don't, and he just stands there, and then it's the end of the episode.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I kind of figured it was a show that, you know, no pun intended, found its legs later, because, you know, the commentary on the, you know, the most recent seasons versus...
Second season was the one that I think people were really super rapturous about, where
yeah.
I was like, really?
Versus what I was watching when this show started. I'm like, all right, this show's obviously, you know, found its footing. So
yeah,
I'm gonna have to revisit that one. Yeah.
All right.
Which I think is going to be a common theme with some of the shows that we're going to talk about today. Because a lot of these I find either start off sort of timid based on, you know, compared to what they turn into later. Either, you know, just in a comfort zone for the creators to push the boundaries after they sell the show.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a couple of examples.
Yeah,
of that,
I don't want to give.
I imagine
examples.
You're probably going to say them, so
yeah.
I won't.
So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
All right, yeah. I will go next. My pick for a cartoon show no kid should ever see is Frisky Dingo, mm-hmm. one that we've talked about on this show many times. Even more so than Archer, I feel like this is one that children should be shielded from. Because I feel like Archer is more it's more explicitly adult. It's more like adults standing around doing things, whereas Frisky Dingo is more. Like potentially could be enticing for a child with the superhero elements and stuff, and it is not appropriate. The trailer park prostitute alone,
yeah,
that's washing up condoms in the early going of season two,
and when they end up in the Chinese sweatshop,
yes,
and he puts the tall beer can around his dick, swing it around, scream, "Master Cylinder." You know, that's probably not too kid friendly.
Chinatown's really got something for everyone.
But
though.
You're right, it's a little more tempting than Archer because it does have sort of ludicrous cartoony elements, you know, like creatures and
yeah.
you know, zany, you know,
costumes.
Yeah, and all that kind of
the
stuff.
The extricles.
Yeah. yeah.
Yeah. But strongly recommend for adults if I haven't said that lately. God, we got to really rewatch that show. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, season one of Frisky Dingo is probably like my favorite season of television.
I would agree with that.
It's solid,
perfect,
and so like in my wheelhouse. Like the first episode is about supervillain marketing. Yep. I'm not even joking, and direct marketing at that. It is just like
and correct punctuation.
Yeah. Yes.
Punt nip.
It's send it to Strunken White. if you haven't, where can you watch it these days?
It's on.
It might be on adultswim.com.
Maybe it was at one point. I think you can buy it on Amazon Prime. Yeah. I don't quote me on that, but I believe it's around. It's on iTunes. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
So you might have to pay for it, but
it's worth
it's
it.
It's really,
yeah,
really
you'll
worth
want to own it.
The $10.
Go buy some DVDs. You'll watch it more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the DVDs. Even we don't have any hard storage of anything anymore. So yeah, Frisky Dingo is my pick, Sarah.
I'm going to go with an old school pick, Ren and Stimpy. I think this was actually pitched at children, and it does have like this childlike build to it. But first of all, if I had seen as a, you know, nationally ranked emetophobe, if I had seen the like we are working on the hairball factory floor episode as a child, I would have had to be hospitalized. Now get back to wharfing. Like it's funny, but I just would have had a stroke, like literally. And then there's also another scene where Ren has a toothache and they cut inside his mouth to a beaver pulling out a nerve ending and chomping on it. And the Foley is like, I mean, it's just horrible. And then they basically did that, like a piano landing on the ground cartoon sound effect at the same time. And it stayed with me for 25 years. I just don't think.
Well, there's
I have a personal story on that particular episode, actually,
where
which
he's
is
pulling. Yeah. There's also the part where he's pulling each nerve ending with pliers.
Yeah.
And boink.
That episode aired on Much Music the day after I got my wisdom teeth out.
Oh, no.
That was Roof. It was Roof Stoof.
My favorite part of that whole scene, though, is the regret.
Painkillers, right?
Yeah, still.
Sorry. But the best part of that scene for me is the regret in which and all I have left is these black stinky holes. And it's just like, it's the one way no point or no return regret that only dental neglect can really deliver. And as somebody who does not take care of his teeth to the point where he should, and have been the recipient of some root canal work, I'm with you there, Ren.
Excellent choice.
All right, well, this one I thought was a no-brainer. My brain immediately went to Metalocalypse.
Yeah.
Which got canceled. Was like a super niche show about, you know, about a black thrash, whatever it is, metal group that sort of like is so popular it becomes one of the world's greatest economic forces and becomes like an empire to itself. They have a floating Viking spaceship, and it's just like really like all the tropes of thrash and death metal from the 80s and 90s sort of brought up to date and made into sort of like a real thing. And it is so violent. It is so gross. Even just the visuals alone should keep your kids away. Like, people get split into two, they get exploded. Like, it is,
and not quick either. They really linger on the massacres,
and not just a few too. Like, there are scenes where whole crowds get decimated. You know, they start jumping into a volcano because they're so excited to see, you know, their favorite band. As it says in the credits, do anything for you know, Death Clock. And you really can't explain without seeing it, like, how kid unfriendly, how much this would scar a kid.
Oh, yeah.
If they saw it. Like, there are, like, people that walk around with half their skin off, you know, dripping stuff. Like, it is totally gross, but totally genre appropriate. Like,
I believe there's a character that does cocaine.
Yes,
that is true.
Roxo. Yes,
he does cocaine.
But it is actually, like, very funny and, like, very well done. Like, even, like, I, you know, that's not my type of music, but Brendan Small, who does the
who did Home Movies as well,
yeah, who created the show, is, like, is a really good guitarist, and he does all this stuff there. But it's also, like, there's this one episode where it is, like, this whole rock opera. It's like, it was like a special episode, and it was really well done. Mm-hmm. Like the music was well done. It was funny, but also, like, good. Like it was surprising. And I am a little bit sad we'll never get the end to it, because the best character, the manager, is sort of like his fate was left up. Like, is he alive? Is he dead? Is he possessed? Is he, you know, where does he lie in the universe? And all attempts to resurrect the show have failed, so we'll never know. But that is my choice for kids. Stay away, Metalocalypse. It'll scar you for life. Tara.
All right, let's move on to our next category, which is cartoon series from which you'd most like to frame a cell, or in other words, the best looking cartoon. Monty.
This was a really easy one for me, because I do have a framed cell from this cartoon. It's Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, sure.
Which is beautiful, and they put so much effort into their background paintings. And I say paintings because I believe they actually used paint back then. Mm-hmm. What I have is a giant, like, 2-foot by 3-foot work of art that I think was originally sold at the Warner Brothers store back when they had those. It's a storyboard for one of the episodes, and that's kind of set back like a shadow box, then on the glass a couple inches in front of it is a big painting of Batman and the Joker. And I got it on eBay, the description just said, signed by an artist or something.
Wow.
Turns out it's signed by Mark Hamill.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Wow. And that Joker is really grim and scary, too. That version of him is really terrifying. The most terrifying to me, personally.
Yeah. And obviously, I love Batman the Animated Series. I think it's a beautiful show. It's one of the cartoons that can get away with, even though it has great voice actors, it could do a silent scene and still be captivating.
Is that the one that introduced Harley Quinn?
Or is
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is that also the one with the Mr. Freeze episode?
Yes, it is.
All right. All right. So that's the one everybody says is the best, right? I'm not.
Yes, it is.
Yes, I thought so. All right. Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool. All right, I will go next, and with apologies and an honorable mention to the show that sort of inspired this episode of our podcast, which is Clone High, which I should mention in case it doesn't come up again, is currently re-airing on MTV, or rather MTV Classic, which is a new spinoff channel where they're showing a bunch of their old sort of their 90s and early 2000s shows. So Daria is back in the mix, and The Hills had a big marathon this weekend, and Beavis and Butthead is airing, and Liquid Television and all that stuff. So Clone High is now airing.
The Hills?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Hills?
Oh, it's not an animated
show.
I got
Hills,
confused
the
for a
animated
second.
Series.
I was confusing it with Mission
it's
Hill.
Just a bunch of sine waves. Thank you.
Clone High is airing Thursday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern. They're showing two episodes back-to-back, so if you somehow have missed this, rectify that immediately. It's extremely important that you do. And that's a show that I think had I remember when I was really obsessed with it when we were first watching it. They had a great website, and they talked a lot about animating Gandhi and how the Gandhi character required like twice as many cells to animate because he was so active and always bouncing around and stuff. So honorable mention to Gandhi as a frameable cell character. But I'm going to say best looking cartoon for me is Gravity Falls. Talked about this a couple weeks ago when I presented it for the canon. The character design is adorable, but also the backgrounds, the Pacific Northwest setting is so rich and beautiful, and they do such a nice job with like the trees, and it's just a very attractive show.
You also don't get a lot of nature set shows.
No, that's true.
Yeah, so it was unique that way too.
Yeah, they take advantage of the setting a lot, and I appreciate that. Sarah, I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to throw to you anyway.
What do you think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to say Samurai Jack.
You're right. This would also be my cartoon that I would be happiest to just listen to. The sound design is so beautiful, and there's really not a lot of dialogue. Often it's just Jack sort of traveling through whatever timescape he's in. But I was rewatching some of them over the weekend. They are all on Hulu, and it's coming back. They still don't have a date yet, but it's going to be back on Cartoon Network in 2017. And it's going to be like 10 episodes that are supposed to be a 5-hour movie. Cool. Tartakovsky apparently said at Comic-Con. Anyway, yay is the short version. But that cartoon is consistently so beautiful, but also funny. Like, if I could have any one cell, of course, it would be when Jack is having to pose as a cat burglar. And as he's taking a hot air balloon away from his whatever, like he's fleeing whatever robots he's fleeing, then all the cats come like tumbling out of the sack. So the burglar was actually burgling cats, but then there's an episode, which I think is pretty well known, with the blind archers who look sort of like coyotes. They are beautiful. They're also very forbidding. This is listed under kids on Hulu, this show, but I'm a little surprised by that. It seems, first of all, a bit slow for children. And also the backstory is Grimsby, Ontario. So I guess if you're not really paying close attention, like my nephew, who is 7, loves it. And I think is basically unfazed by that stuff. I tend to think that children are a little more fragile than they are, because I was just this high-strung freak when I was little, and everything freaked me out, and it still does. But yeah, Samurai Jack is beautiful to look at and listen to, and especially the woods that he's passing through on this island of the blind archers. As the seasons change, it's beautiful. And then you have like stereotypically cute bunnies as well. Like, it's, there's something for everyone. Nice.
I am and so glad to hear that he is continuing the reboot or whatever, the continuation. Powerpuff Girls, the continuation, that was one of the biggest disappointments of
that
recent
was
animation. That was really bad. Obviously, you know, it was just a money grab. I don't think anybody from the original one was really, in any significant way, was involved. My choice.
A couple of the voices were. But not all of them. It was weird.
Yeah. But the animation was off, and like everything just seemed like it was just like, how can we do this cheaper and faster? Powerpuff Girls Mark II. Okay. So I also, like Monty, have the cell that I always wanted. It is hanging up in our living room. It is Homer Simpson walking into the living room on whacking day with his giant 10-gallon hat and air horn and the stupefied grin on his face as he walks in the room. Just goes,
you should specify, it's not so much a cell as you blew up that frame.
I blew up the frame, took it to Kinko's. They're like, can you print this up? They're like, what? And I'm like, just do it. I'll pay you money.
It's the hat. The hat is just so, it's joy. Yeah.
And his face is slightly off model too, which is also what makes it so charming. Like, his smile is slightly askew.
I love that about that era of The Simpsons before they went all computer. It's just like when the eyeballs are a little bit off.
Yep.
And the things you just don't get like that anymore. Like, you know when Lisa cackles when she's going crazy in a couple of the episodes, and her eyes just like, they're like a little bit off center, but they don't look like purposely crossed or anything like that. You just don't get that when they switch the computer stuff. But I do have some runner-ups that I would like to get that I do not yet have, and one of them actually was Ren pulling nerves with his tweezers. The other one from Ren and Stimpy is when Ren is in the bathtub dreaming of things, chicken pot pie is the one that I would like at that moment where it's floating above his tiny little bathtub. But the one I have to get that has a lot of personal meaning to me is the walrus that the horse, and he opens the door. The walrus is there and he just says, "Call the police." And the reason for that is...
I'm sure you've told the story before, but tell it anyway.
All right. So a long time ago, me and Tara lived in Toronto with Tara's sister, who was going to college at the time. And we were all watching probably Amazing Race or Survivor. That was the era. They were just like relatively new. And it was sometime in November or December. It was near Christmas. And we're all like, oh, we're very snacky. We need snacks. And we literally lived like four doors down from the corner store.
And this was before DVRs.
Yeah. And so we were all like, well, who's going to go? Who's going to go? And like Tara's like, well, you should go. You wanted snacks. Like, yeah, I want snacks, but I don't want them that bad. Finally, Tara gets fed up. She's like, oh, fine, I'll go. So she stomps out and promptly wipes out on the porch stairs walking down.
They were all snowy and icy.
And all you hear, me and Leah, we're on the other side. And all we hear is, thwomp, bump. And we just opened the door a little bit, and Tara's so mad because she was mad that she got sucked into going to get snacks in the first place, and then she immediately wiped out.
It really
hurt. And me and Leah are trying so hard not to laugh in her face and failing very hard.
You were trying
so
that hard.
I just slowly closed the door on her, Godfather style. I just... Just turned
yeah,
to Leah.
Leah also say, close the door?
Yeah. Leah's like, close the door. And I look at her, call the police. And we just close the door and we're laughing so loud on the other side of the door. And Tara's just sitting there in the snow, having just hurt her ass. And we are just crying on the other side of the door. She comes back.
I still went to the store for these two dickheads.
20 minutes later, she's back. And we're still in the living room laughing about this. It just went on and on and on. It was a great bonding moment for all involved. And thank you, Red and Stimpy. Thank you, Frightened Walrus. That is my thing.
Thank you, Snow on the Stairs. Someone should have shoveled. All right, moving on to our next category, which is... kids' favorite kids' cartoon series that also works on adults. Monty.
I was torn between two, but I'm going to go with Steven Universe.
Okay.
And sort of like BoJack Horseman, it takes a while to really lock into what it's going to be. Its first season is 52 episodes. They're only 11 minutes long each, but still 52 episodes.
Yeah.
And I would say it doesn't start getting... like, interesting until episode 20 or 30 or so. But once you get into it, it's really good. Like, it's really, really good.
Tell us about the show, because I haven't actually seen it.
Okay. The premise is nonsense, so bear with me.
Okay.
Steven is this short, fat kid, and he's being raised by three women. The women are actually gems. They're literally gems. Like, this one is amethyst, this one is pearl, and this one is garnet. But in addition to being gems, they're also people.
Okay.
And they're constantly saving the world from stuff. And Steven is half gem. His mother, Rose Quartz, died at some point in the past. His father, a former musician named Gary Universe, lives in a van down by the car wash. That's why he's not raising the kid. Uh-huh. The three gems are way more together. And the town has various wacky people in it.
Okay.
There's no sense of hiding any of this from the town. The town will just occasionally say, oh, there's those three weird ladies who have magic powers.
All right.
So... Steven is small and optimistic. That's the premise. Jumping forward like a season, you've got villains that turn out to be surprisingly sympathetic. You've got really interesting investigations of what it means to love somebody, because two gems can fuse into one and become a whole new person. And there's a lot of episodes about that, about what happens when two gems who don't like each other fuse, that fusion doesn't last, and what happens if somebody fuses against their will, because this is a children's cartoon, but it's still got a couple episodes that are kind of about rape.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, we're talking consent issues?
Absolutely, huh? We are.
Okay. Huh.
All right.
And it's a lot deeper than it, like BoJack Horseman, it's a lot deeper than it seems like it's going to be at first, but it's really good.
Isn't there like gender fluidity, like topics?
Oh yeah,
brought up
the gems appear to be women. I don't think they are women because they can all shapeshift, and also they're gems,
right? Uh-huh.
But they're women in principle, and that means you've got a character, Steven, being raised by three moms.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to describe,
okay.
But I think it's really,
I'm intrigued
really good.
By it. Sounds totally outrageous. Sorry.
It's on Hulu, or at least the first season is, and the first season is 52 episodes long, so you have plenty of time to learn whether or not you like it.
All right.
And it's one of those shows that does a lot of universe building, right? So it's sort of like Adventure Time that way, that people get hooked into it for that reason. Like, and to universe build like in a 15 minute chunk or 11 minute chunk after commercials is like an interesting prospect. It's this weird sort of bag of Doritos kind of deal where they're building up to something, but it's such like little bite-sized morsels that it's like very addicting, you know, for shows like that. I find like Frisky Dingo was sort of the same way, even though the episodes are longer. But, like, you know, there was so much universe building in one short season. So much happens, so many characters introduced, so many settings, so many concepts, that, like, it really is, like, I want more and more. Like, I can't imagine a 52, how that would feed your addiction to have 52 episodes a year.
And it really takes its time, too, because Steven starts out knowing pretty much nothing about the universe. Like, he doesn't know anything about his mother, how she died, what her powers were. So as he learns that, the audience learns it as well. It's created by Rebecca Sugar, who did some of my favorite things on Adventure Time. And the songs share Rebecca Sugar's tendency towards sort of cheerfully amelodic tunefulness.
Cool.
All right. Excellent pick. I will go next. And I have two, then I think one of them might be Dave. So I'll just say them both. And then if one of
Sharks,
these is
swords.
Your pick. Yeah, all right. I'll let you get to that one then, and I will choose Regular Show, another one that we've talked about on this show a lot. It's a Cartoon Network show that airs in primetime, so presumably it is for children, and yet it's very unkid-like. It's mostly about these two characters like having jobs and hating them and trying to get out of shit. Like, there's not, it's a very adult take on getting threatened with firing all the time, like in almost every episode, in almost every interaction with their boss, they are threatened with getting fired,
justifiably,
totally, but still not something that you see a lot in shows for kids. And then, you know, they start in very banal tasks, and inevitably they open portals to other dimensions, and then shit happens.
The script-o-matic of it is sort of like, it's not a mystery, but where Scooby-Doo reveals that the ghost was Old Man Crothers all along. Regular Show's like, oh no, all this craziness happens. It's real.
Yeah,
the alternate dimension has been opened, and this like crazy ghost is real.
Yeah, my favorite episode of Regular Show, because it broke with that mold, is one where they make friends with this character that was like an anthropomorphized TV that was the star of a TV show when they were kids, and they have to like take it on the run because it's getting hunted by whatever force, doesn't matter, and you think the whole time you're watching it that it's just, this is some kind of otherworldly creature that has crossed their paths somehow, and then at the end, like, the TV falls open and there's like a little dwarf inside. And it's like the one episode where it's like, oh, there really was a person in there and there isn't anything supernatural happening. This is just weird and fucked up. But I have thought many times about submitting it to the can, and now I can't because I've burned it. But I think it's like a bridge too far for anyone that we would ever talk to on this podcast.
My favorite, like, sort of like, you know, Venn diagram in the middle between kids and adult cartoons are the ones where after you watch, you just turn the other person in the room. What the hell did we just watch? Yeah,
totally.
And the one for the for me on regular show is the video game one with sort of the King of Kong-esque guy who really can't admit that he's not the best at the video games. And then he becomes this like floating head video game god, and he splits dimensions and he's like trying to destroy the world because he can't be the best at, you know, whatever the Donkey Kong equivalent of it. It is so fucked up at by the end of the episode, you just turn to the person like, how are kids watching this? Like, what's going to happen? What's the president going to look like in 2040? You know,
yes,
it's amazing.
However, we did have a child staying here a few months ago, past guest of the show, Janu McEachern, came with his daughter, Molly, and she is 9. And she watched both this and Pickle and Peanut and really liked them both. So we were like, all right, I don't know. What do we know about kids? Apparently nothing.
Oh, so we don't have to raise them. I introduced her to both of them. I made her watch them. Like, yeah, we were there.
But she was really into both of them. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I don't have to deal with the consequences.
You're welcome.
I can just when I let my nephew watch Gremlins when he's 4. Mistake, but not really my problem to deal with.
Right.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Well, that's sort of the beauty of a kid's imagination, is that it's like this wonderfully elastic thing where a lot of things can happen. And then the things that don't make sense, they just like incorporate it somehow in this like casserole reality that they have.
Book title.
Which is why my pick, SpongeBob, super inconsistent with how necessary it is for people to have gills in this universe, but who cares? If you spend enough time with kids, if you have kids or live in the same building as kids, you do find yourself like they will attach to certain shows as we all did. And you're always kind of praying that they pick one that isn't going to make you run into a fork at top speed, because really, like, my nephew's Caillou phase, like literally both his parents like hiding in my half of the house, like, we can't. Nusol Manol. But SpongeBob, like, I have endured many many SpongeBob phases with various children, and I really don't get sick of it. And Gary's my favorite thing, and he's used just enough. Like, Gary gets the ick, or whatever it is, the rabies equivalent. Like, and, you know, he's a cat, but he's a snail, and he's also completely over it with everyone else on the show. I love it. So, yes, SpongeBob.
Love it. Dave.
All things we talked about before, Gravity Falls, Pickle and Peanut, and Regular Show are my picks. All talked about at length on the show recently, so I'll just leave it at that. I think they're all great, and I've watched them all.
All right. And we had a wild card where we each got to pick our own award category just for us. Monty, what is yours, and what is your pick?
My category is Best Soundtrack.
Oh, nice. And
there are a number of shows that have already been mentioned. Like, I mentioned Adventure Time and Steven Universe. I think those have both have great songs in them. But my pick has to be Home Movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because, mentioned, Brendan Small is a very good guitarist. He plays not only the Brendan in Home Movies, but also Dwayne, who barely speaks, but is a guitarist. And he's constantly putting songs into the show, like Starboy and the Captain of Outer Space, Don't Put Marbles Up Your Nose, and the song that happens in my head anytime I see any mention of a certain German writer from Prague. Kafka.
Yes.
He is Franz Kafka. Franz Kafka.
Home Movies is like, it's well known, but I still feel like it's under the radar.
I agree.
You know, like, it's right on the cusp of like being more popular, you know, popular as it should have been. And I don't know whether it's like the squiggle vision turns people off like that from the first season, but like, it's such a well put together, sort of like sneaks up on you sort of show.
And I try to use Bob's Burgers popularity to push Home Movies on people.
Yeah.
Sarah, I'm loath to ever recommend a show to you, but this is one I think you would like, even though it seems like a weird suggestion, but there's a lot of really funny stuff.
The intro clip was from Home Movies.
Yes.
It was Coach McGurk and Brendan having a chat.
Yes.
And it's got H. John Benjamin in two roles, one of which he does not do that same voice he always does. It's amazing.
Wow. I'll check it out.
He did bring that Jason voice to Bob's Burgers recently, though. There was, he did another character.
I'm always happy when I see Melissa show up in a tiny role on Bob's Burgers. I'm like, oh, they're back together again.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, speaking of Bob's Burgers, my category was true heir to The Simpsons, and my pick is Bob's Burgers. The Simpsons, I feel like, is, you know, it's so much the air we breathe that there was barely any reason to mention it in this. It's like we all know at least those first 2 to 9 seasons, you know, reasonable people can disagree about when it actually started getting really terrible. But, you know, I think that other than Dave's mention of the frame, it's so accepted that it's one of the greatest. We don't necessarily have to talk about it, but there have been so many attempts to recreate or recapture the magic that The Simpsons brought us, not just the incredibly ill-advised ones like Fish Police, but also, well, the incredibly ill-advised ones like Dinosaurs. No. Bob's Burgers is the first show that I really feel like I could see it lasting 25 seasons and, you know, maybe not being as good the whole way through as The Simpsons, but like it's still in its infancy relative to the run of The Simpsons at this point, and it's still so good. Every episode feels like a high point. And so I feel like that's one that potentially could go the distance. And full disclosure, a friend of ours, many friends of ours, but Wendy Molyneux, the wife of Jeff Drake, who's been a guest on the show many times, is writes on it, and she is brilliant, and it is brilliant. And yeah, Bob's Burgers is my nominee. Sarah.
Jeff had some stuff in the comic book.
He did. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
My category is adult cartoon or animated property that you are supposed to like, but you don't. South Park. I just can't take, it's actually not that I don't like it. Like if they just sort of like, ran it through some kind of sequencer and keyed everybody down into a different frequency that didn't feel like someone was jackhammering a knitting needle into my frontal lobe, I wish I liked the show. I think they do a lot of good things or have in the past. I thought the original, like, whatever, cutout, paper, crazy Jesus, like, proof of concept cartoon was hilarious. It's going back like 20 years. Like, I wish I could take physically, aurally the show, but I can't. So that's my category.
All right.
I can appreciate that. But then again, the end where Eric Cartman has revealed that he has made chili out of that guy's parents is one of the true largest, biggest, best what the fuck moments I've ever watched on TV.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I get it, though. I get it. My award is the Warren Buffett Best ROI for Useful Everyday Quotes. So, top five shows. Number one, The Simpsons.
Of course.
All right. Mm-hmm. And the ones I use the most is blank if we're lucky. With a cool, dry wit like that, I could be an action hero. $5, get out of here. These are just some of the quotes I like to use every day. Number two, Frisky Dingo.
Yep.
X has got something for everybody. Is the doom implied? And of course, Tara's favorite, Six Bars.
Yeah.
Number three, Clone High. Just a lot of yelling, Stamos!
Yeah.
Riot! And of course, hello, fellow
students. Raise it!
Yes, raise it! Hello, fellow students. Number four, Venture Brothers. Gonna put that in my to-don't list.
Yes.
Is great. Not exactly something came up with, but the delivery of Dick Move from the Monarch is fantastic. And of course, this little bit.
That gets kind of
compromising.
Well, naughty, extra hot, great. Yeah, more like that.
Just play it.
Yeah,
that's where the podcast name comes from. And number five, I think one of my favorite weird little throwaways is Futurama, and it's all for the professors. Tell them I hate them to the Swedish team at the Olympics. And so those are my recipients for the There's Warren Buffett Best Return on Investment for Useful Everyday Quotes.
I regret nothing.
Speaking of adult cartoons, that creepy music cue means it's time for The Blotter Presents. I did not think I would have anything to present given our theme of adult cartoons, but there is a property called Crime, the animated series.
What?
I don't think it ever aired anywhere, but the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles did foster this program of shorts called Crime, the animated series. it's like little 3 to 5 minute clips, which are just people talking about, there's one guy who used to be a bank robber and then he was paroled and like wrote a book about his life. And he was talking about his first bank robbery. And then they put kind of graphic novel looking like Frank Miller-esque visuals on it. Another one is a guy talking about how he opened a tattoo parlor in this terrible part of town. And people were always coming and like robbing his equipment. And he was like, but he just kept like buying it back from pawn shops. And like, he refused to leave. And eventually the neighborhood gentrified. It's actually a really like, you're sort of like, I can't believe someone made a cartoon out of crime. But if you think about it, it's like actually a really good idea for the genre. Like, it's something different to do if you have the budget that some investigation discovery shows seem to have, which is, you know, $5 and whatever they found in the couch next to the soda machine. It's like, okay, maybe this is a different way to do it. It sort of has this like podcast feel. It's like the criminal podcast that Phoebe Judge does, but with visuals. So I definitely recommend it. It has a little YouTube channel and we will put that in the show notes. And so, yeah, there is a crime cartoon and I kind of wish it would come to like Sundance or Ovation Channel or somewhere where it might find a home and that they could expand on it a little, because I think it's not a terrible idea.
You ever read comics, Sarah? Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of one called Stray Bullets?
No.
It's a series of vignettes and they're all sort of like little crime nuggets, and some of them are like, right, but they feel very true to life, even though I don't think they are, but they're really well done. And like a collection is like maybe 10 or 12 of these little stories. There's a app called Comixology, and right now you can buy like for $10 all you can eat comics from a big bucket. And it's in the first collection of those is in there, but it sounds a bit like, you know, the static version of what you're talking about, but it's really well done. Like they feel like really good first halves of Law and Order episodes like from back in the day.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I have a feeling there's anime that gets into like that. They might be based on real stories of the Yakuza, but I just don't know enough about anime or the Yakuza to know which ones are like ripped from the headlines. Right. Anime and manga versus just regular fictional. Right. So, but yeah, I think that's a whole area that true crime could get into since it's so hot right now.
About 20 years ago, there was these series of kind of graphic novels called The Big Book of
I have a bunch of
those. It kind of reminds me of this, because you get like The Big Book of Crime, then it would be full of little comic books. Like a different comic book artist would do every story.
There was one like that, wasn't there? Serial killers and all that? Yeah. How come those aren't available like digital? Maybe they are, but I feel like that should be on one of these all you can eat comic apps. Those are so good. I had like 15 of those at least. I don't know what happened to them, but
I was looking at the shelf just now, like, oh yeah, they are.
The first one was the Urban Legends one.
Yeah, that was
that one was really good. I remember the cover. It had the crocodile coming out of the sewer.
That's right.
Oh man. Oh, I gotta hunt those down now.
I really took her back.
Yeah. Nostalgia.
But the clip, Sarah, that sounds really cool. And I was, when you were describing them, I thought, oh, that's something where if MTV could revive Liquid Television, that would be a good place for something like that to live too. If they were just like a short,
short
compilation. So anyway, cool.
All right, we're doing some more Around the Dialin'. Tara.
Well, Catfish is back. So is my coverage. last week, the MTV dropped two episodes back to back. They were really something. What's interesting is the pick of those two is that they were pretty much the polar opposites of Catfish episodes, in that the first one was like this total Machiavelli scumbag weirdo, solicited nudes and in some cases videos from like 400 women, he said, which like that number I feel like is either very high or very low compared to what he actually did, because he was remarkably effective at it. considering that when he was finally unmasked, he looked obviously nothing like the person that he was posing as on Tinder and Instagram, but rather looked like Patton Oswalt, kind of. Anyway, no offense to Patton, aww, I guess. And then the second one was just about this girl who was so dumb that she kind of deserved everything that happened to her.
How is this person... Like, she can't live unsupervised.
I don't know.
She's too stupid.
She didn't. She lived with her mother's boyfriend, who is cut off the Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Like, I know that Wi-Fi thing sounded crazy, but, like, clearly this is an ongoing problem with her being...
Too dumb.
Like, having naiveitis. Yeah.
Well, because the story in that case was she had been tricked by someone for 3 years who was actually, like, her close female friend in high school. And then immediately went from that relationship with this guy to this one that went from more than a friendship to a relationship. And he was also lying to her completely and was like, I'm San Diego. And he was in Alaska. He ended up in prison. It was really a satisfying 2 hours of catfishing, and covering them is one of the things I enjoy the most on the site. So please go to previously.tv for my coverage. And every Wednesday during the episode airings, I cover it, live tweet it on our live Twitter account, which is at previously TV now. This season seems to be one where they decided to really open up the purse strings, because this week's episode has them going to England. And I know that there's one, at least this season, where Niamh was in Hilo. He was on this island, Dave. He was somewhere around here.
Oh yeah. Right.
So, but my prediction, this is just a side note for Dave only. I predict that the catfish they find ends up being in Pune. Let's see if I end up being right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pune's kind of like the Kentucky of our island. Yeah.
It is.
No offense, Kentucky. But, yeah.
Bad shit goes down in Pune. Anyway, so yeah, follow all of that at MTV Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern and on previously.tv. And for my plug, I'm going to mention
that wasn't your plug?
No.
All right.
That's talking about catfish.
Felt pluggish. But I am going to allow it.
It ended with a plug, but there's another plug, which is currently on previously.tv. We are in the midst of Booze Week.
Yep.
So we have a lot of coverage, obviously our swarm coverage of the Wine Show, which finally just made it over from England to Hulu. The entire season is available, so you can watch along with that. And we have coverage of that and lots of other cool stuff. I know Sarah has some drunky stuff planned. Some I've already seen in the back
on the site too.
So yeah, go to previously.tv for all of our Booze Week fun.
Monty.
Okay. CISO is one of these super niche streaming services that's like splintered all the shows, so you never know where anything can be watched.
Yes.
Like we were talking about AdultSwim.com might be where you watch stuff.
Yeah.
CISO, like all of these, has a few catalog items and a few original shows. But this one has been curated directly towards me, because the catalog items are like all of Monty Python's Flying Circus and all of Kids in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the original shows are things like Bajillion Dollar Properties, a really funny parody of real estate reality shows that was created by Kulap Vilaysack, Scott Aukerman's wife. So last week, Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher's new show, Take My Wife, dropped, and I watched all 6 episodes without getting off my couch. I think it's really, really funny. It's a little bit confusing because it's based on them. It's characters named Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher who are in a relationship and trying to make it as comics. And there are guest stars, but some of the guest stars, like Maria Bamford and Paul F. Tompkins, play themselves. But other guest stars, like Laura Keitlinger and Matt Wronger, play characters.
Mm.
And it's a little weird because when somebody comes on screen, you're like, okay, that's Jonah Ray.
Right.
No, he's kind of playing Mark Maron here, not Jonah Ray.
Yeah.
But it's really funny. And I'm annoyed by how splintered television is getting.
Yeah.
But I like that there's room for a 6-episode niche show like this to exist.
Yeah.
Like they don't have to come up with a 5-season plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Discovery Challenge is like one of the whoever cracks that is going to be a gazillionaire. Yeah. Nobody's done it yet. Like,
well, I heard something about now CISO, you can get it through your Amazon Prime membership, but I don't know if that means you still have to pay for it, because it's a pay service. It's not like, well, I was going to say it's not like Hulu, but Hulu's a pay service now too. So,
yeah.
But I imagine you can get an app for it on your Roku or Apple TV or whatever it is that you use.
Yeah, I watched it through my Xbox One.
There you go.
Which and. Like, I feel like all of these services are like CBS All Access, where there will be like, we have a brand new Star Trek show that you have to subscribe to see. And then anything else? Well, you're lucky if you care.
You like Mannix?
Hey, there's the Good Wife spinoff. Come on, you guys. And the new web-only season of Big Brother.
Oh, really?
Cricket. Yes, that's what's coming in the fall.
Wait,
they're having
it
like a between season season that's going to be only online.
I see.
So I don't know.
Just people cleaning the house out for the next group.
Slightly smaller brother, basically, right?
Posing it down with penicillin.
Polishing the camera lenses, that sort of thing.
Well, that's, I appreciate the recommendation because I heard Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher as guests on Comedy Bang Bang last week, and they were so charming that it made me want to check it out. So now I'm going to because you said to.
Ha! Recommended. And I'm going to do three plugs.
What?
Drunk with Power.
Oh!
Plug one is relevant to this show. Last week or so, I wrote an article on previously.tv that compared the A-Team episode, Black Day at Bad Rock, and the Knight Rider episode, Good Day at White Rock, which aired 3 months apart. And I compared them and how close they came to the Spencer Tracy movie, Bad Day at Black Rock.
Yep.
I believe I am now the world's expert on those three titles, and I still had to look them up and read them one word at a time because I cannot keep them straight.
I'm going to say, just remind myself, let's say 3 months from now, let's check on the SEO ranking for any of those titles and see if we're not the first for everything.
Awesome. All right, that's one. Proceed with your other plugs.
I am part of a podcast cooperative kind of called The Incomparable. You can find it at theincomparable.com. There are many podcasts there. The lead podcast is called The Incomparable. I am not on the most recent episode, which is a 2-hour investigation of the 30-second trailer for Rogue One. That wasn't me, but I have been on many other episodes that go similarly pointlessly deep. another podcast there is Total Party Kill, where people play D&D. I am one of those people. We have Pod for Ham, where we are going song by song through the songs on the Hamilton original cast album. The Incomparable will be at the Now Hear This Festival in Anaheim.
Hey, that's fun.
We know a guy. And my third thing is that Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Pacific, I am watching Star Wars The Clone Wars, 2 episodes per week, and talking about it on this app called Talk Show. Hmm. So it's kind of a thing where you, like, text along with things.
Fun.
And that's what I'm doing.
All right.
End of plugs.
Sarah.
Great British Baking Show, series 6, I guess, American season 3, concluded for some people. What the hell?
It's really
That's ridiculous.
Seattle is 2 episodes behind on it, or 2 weeks behind.
What happened was some of the local markets were showing like 2 back-to-back, and then some weren't. So whereas you think that everything is going to be all the same, like with Downton Abbey, not the case. Proceed, Sarah.
No, we started 2 weeks behind.
That's why I just support corporate TV.
Sorry.
Yeah. I will be vague, but here's the beauty of this show, especially since I'm still hate watching MasterChef. Like, it is my husband's and my favorite like weekend order in some diner food brunch hate watch. My favorites never win on that show. The drama comes completely from interpersonal stuff and bullshitty editing. That is not the case on The Great British Baking Show, which, like, I guess maybe occasionally you have someone who's kind of a pill. Like, once, when they're really stressed out by fondant. The rest of the time, that never happens. My favorites never win at these other shows, but my, like, everyone was my favorite. Oh. Like, and that happens every season. We got to the end of this one. Everyone was crying on the show. Everyone was crying in my living room. I think even the cat was a little bit, like, misting up. And then I was told by our esteemed colleague, Mark Blankenship, who ably covered the most recent series for us on previously.tv, that the rest of the series, if you can't watch it on the PBS app, which if y'all are behind, I recommend, they dropped everything. Oh. So you can catch up. And that's free.
It's free.
Pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Like Yeah, and that's not that content is not like extra. You have to be a local member of WNET or whatever.
Cool.
So I would recommend checking it out. And they have the previous two series, which also are labeled out of order for some reason compared to their British airings. But then the rest of the show, there was like a third other season that I didn't even know about. And that's all findable on YouTube. So we watched the last one of these. We were immediately like upset and bereft. Mm. And then we remembered that we can go on YouTube and we have like 40 episodes still to watch. Plus all the ones that my husband didn't see yet, which I will happily watch again because Ian with the giant ginger beard, love him.
And if you can fly to England, the next season, season 7, starts airing on August 24th. So book your flights now because that is coming.
Yes, indeed. But yes, public service announcement. I know a lot of people were like, how could you put this up? It's a spoiler. Half the country didn't get you know, we apologize. We really try to not do that. We tried not to spoil anything in homepage or social media copy, and we didn't. But if your local PBS station screwed you, get the PBS app. It's free.
Yeah, we have that for our Apple.
Yeah. My plug is for my coverage of Mr. Robot, from which the show, not my coverage, I assume people are fleeing like rats from a sinking ship. Except the ship isn't even fucking sinking. It's like half in the water and half out, and then it's doing an 80s sitcom dream sequence.
And maybe it's not even a ship. It's a helicopter.
Yeah. That's part bear. Or is it? Maybe it's drugs. I mean, it's becoming like I'm almost fascinated by the extent to which the show is willing to just stall, have like a thing. Singular happen. It's sort of a big deal every episode, sort of right at the end, and then kind of not bring you up to date on where anything is with, you know, a giant fucking shootout that mowed down a bunch of FBI agents on foreign soil. When did we find out about that? At 31, and then apparently 2 weeks have passed. Spoiler, I guess, except nobody fucking cares anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of having a good time covering it because it's like, well, the show is completely, like, it's not even a show anymore. It's just like a, I don't know, it's like people's vacation slides, except you're high. I don't even know what's going on.
I have two things to talk about. Number one is a Hulu, I believe, show on Hulu called Occupied.
No, it's on Netflix.
Netflix called Occupied. So the Norwegians decide that they are not going to send oil out anymore because they're a bunch of pinkos in power. And then the EU is like, we need that oil. And then the Russians are like, tell you what, we're just going to come into your country and we'll just be friends for a while and we'll bring some guns and you guys just get your oil production back up and then we'll leave. After that happens. And then it's a political drama after that about all the compromises and all the intrigue and, you know, the power play between the Russian dignitaries there and the government such as it is.
And I was just going to say, and what it's like for ordinary people, like whether they're considered collaborators, if they're friendly to Russian people in their businesses or in other ways and stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. It the concept sounds outrageous, but in practice it is pretty well done.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed plausible in sort of a peak oil desperation kind of way. I think Tara's favorite part was the Norwegian commander uniform.
Oh, yeah. It was elaborate.
He's wearing everything. He's got every badge, every medal, every feather, every whatever those things are in the shoulders.
Epaulettes.
Yes, thank you.
Epaulettes.
Yeah. Everything. This guy's uniform has to weigh 80 pounds and there's not 1 ounce of armor protection.
He was the Iris Apfel of the Norwegian army.
Yeah. So I recommend that. You do have to pay attention to subtitles so you can't kind of half-ass watch it. All right. And the second one is the Amazon reboot of The Tick.
Yep.
Let me just say this about this pilot.
We got a screener. It's dropping on Friday along with two of its other comedy pilots where they're doing that thing where you can watch and vote on whether you like it or not. Not that apparently has that much to do with what they pick
up. I realize it's dropping very soon. I feels like this was not the final version. They would have to do a lot to it to make this decent.
Well, they sent it to me last Friday.
I know.
So I assume it's as final as it's going to get, probably.
Well, some of the effects were...
Before the series gets picked up, if it does.
Stuff like that. Anyways, it was very slow. You know you're in trouble when the narration by the tick, one of the first things says, I won't be in this for a while, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
It really isn't. Oh, just following Arthur, who you'll remember, he's the moth character from...
The most charismatic, exciting part of the series. Sure.
Yeah. And like they've made him even duller and they've given
more
him this
of a
like sad backstory. Oh. The show doesn't know whether it's trying to be true to the comic or trying to update itself. And it's like splitting the difference in the worst way.
And yet Ben Edlund wrote it. So
yeah.
I don't know why he keeps not doing this right.
He feels like he doesn't understand his own material.
It's really weird. At 5 minutes in, I turned to Dave and was like, is this super slow or is it just me? It's really slow. And then toward the end, Dave was like, is this an hour? Like, no, it just feels like it. Really, really, really slow and a bummer. I mean, Peter Serafinowicz as the Tick is funny, but there's literally hardly any of him in the pilot at all. Almost all of it is devoted to laying out in several different chunks the backstory of Arthur and why he's obsessed with the current villain. Blech, what a bummer.
Yeah, it was surprising how wrong they seemed to get it, and I was shocked.
So you can experience that too if you have an Amazon Prime account.
Yay!
On Friday, August 19th, when it's dropping. I Love Dick is one of the other ones that's dropping. I forget what the third one is. So, yep.
All right. Title made me laugh.
Yep. All right, everybody. It is time for the canon. Monty is presenting this week. Take it away, Monty.
All right. I went a little unusual. I'm just going to say that up front. I'm going with what I consider to be one of the most important moments in game show history. The time Michael Larson appeared on Press Your Luck in episode 188, I'm told, and won more money than anyone in the history of daytime game shows ever had. Press Your Luck is a game show from the glory days of daytime game shows, the mid-1980s. It combined a very thin random chance element with an even thinner trivia aspect and the worst animations ever seen on American television. The way the game worked was that contestants answered questions and earned spins, then they used those spins on the big board. That's actually what it was called, the big board. They hadn't invented cool names yet. The results could be money, prizes, or whammies, which zeroed out their money. And if you got four whammies, you were out of the game. The idea was that you'd have a handful of spins, and at some point you'd decide you had enough money, so you'd pass your spins to somebody else. Or you'd press your luck and keep going, hoping not to hit a whammy. Ideally, you'd get big bucks and no whammies. As a game, it wasn't much, but it achieved pop culture immortality in two ways. First, the contestants shrieked, "Big bucks, no whammies, and stop!" with such monotonous regularity that anyone who was alive at the time or had the Game Show Network at any point between the 1990s and now still has it running through their brains. And second, the whammies were embodied as these little cackling monsters that would come out. So instead of a contestant just dropping to $0, the audience would be treated to a few seconds of a poorly drawn goblin operating a jackhammer or breakdancing or something. The voice work on the whammies is excruciating to listen to, but I feel that it's important to hear an example. We have already heard the phrase jackhammering a knitting needle into my very soul on this episode. We may hear it again. Could we please hear clip one?
Stop at all. Wiped out a bit of funds, Patty, but you still have three spins. All right, here we go.
All right, no more whammy. Stop!
Stop it, oh.
I didn't understand what the hell that was.
I heard taking your money.
Yeah, I picked those clips. I have no idea what that whammy just said. But you heard it a lot.
Your mother sucks dick in hell.
Could be. Incidentally, those whammies were animated by Savage Steve Holland.
Oh.
Who made 1980s movies.
Yeah.
I think that's neat. All right. There were a lot of game shows at the time, but Press Your Luck had a legacy that's outlasted such contemporaries as Tic-Tac-Doe and Sale of the Century, and a million more I could list right now. Now, as to what makes Michael Larson's game canon-worthy, I'm going to build up to it. Michael Larson was an unemployed weirdo with big dreams. He thought very highly of himself, and he thought he could figure out a way to break a game show. And against all odds, that's exactly what he did. He would watch Press Your Luck obsessively on one of the 20 televisions he had on at all times. I don't know why having 19 extra televisions was supposed to help, but everyone describes his big wall of televisions, like Sherlock has on Elementary. He would record Press Your Luck on VHS tapes and watch them over and over again, looking for patterns, much like Reddit does now. Yeah. And he figured out that the random blinking wasn't random, which, to be honest, should have been obvious to anyone from watching it just once. But somehow he was the first person to realize that he could pick what square to land on instead of just shouting things and hitting the button randomly. Every square that you land on has three potential results, but not every square has a whammy on it. So Michael Larson targeted two squares that always had money plus a bonus spin. Then he managed to talk his way through the contestant screening process, got on the show, and absolutely eviscerated it. Could we hear clip two, please?
14,136 on the line.
Stop!
Stop at $4,000 in a spin. 18,136, Michael. Six spins and you got all that money. You've got more than almost 14,000 more. He's going to go. Michael's going.
In the first round, he didn't have his timing down yet. But in the second round, he started with seven spins and then just went for it. Host Peter Tomarkin started out with his usual kidding around, asking Larson, "Are you sure you want to keep going?" The way the odds usually worked in the show, someone could get a lucky streak going, but a whammy would get them before they got above $3,000 or $4,000, usually. You were absolutely not supposed to get money plus an additional spin on 31 straight spins. But that's what happened this time. As it went on and on and on, Tomarkin had to start doing material about the president of the network shutting them down, which was not necessarily a joke. The people behind the scenes were freaking out during this entire episode. The people in the control panel were saying, "Should we pull the plug? Can we arrest him? What can we do?" But Larson wasn't cheating. He was just taking advantage of a poorly designed game board. It's like if someone had the ability to spin the Wheel of Fortune to whatever spot they wanted and also knew all the answers ahead of time. Except even that wouldn't measure up to what Michael Larson achieved because the game was inherently open-ended, which is how it technically ended up as two separate episodes because he just kept on getting additional spins until he took mercy on CBS and decided to stop. Normally, one Press Your Luck game easily fits into a half-hour episode with plenty of room for terrible banter to fill space. So I'm considering Larson's game as a two-part episode. He ended up with $110,237, of which $104,950 was in cash, and the other $5,000 or so were trips and prizes. Could we hear clip three, please?
You have won more money than anyone's ever even thought about winning on Press Your Luck. Oh. That is by far the most ever won on this show. You are the all-time champion, retired, and we get a special call from the president of CBS thanking you for retiring as the Hall of Fame all-time winner in the history of Press Your Luck.
Now, after Larson got his money, his life got weird. This isn't strictly relevant to the episode, but I love this story. There was a local radio station that would read the serial number of a $1 bill, and whoever had that bill would win $30,000. So Michael Larson went to his bank and withdrew his entire savings, so he had $50,000 in $1 bills in paper bags around his house. He didn't win the contest, and I will suggest that the reason was probably that the radio station was reading the serial numbers of bills they had in their possession. Anyway, someone broke into Larson's house and stole all of his $1 bills. Which is a fittingly weird way to lose a fortune that he won in one of the weirdest ways ever. This is an episode that's been the subject of documentaries and an episode of This American Life. It resulted in the entire show changing its pattern and then being taken down for retooling until computers could actually do randomness. It's the only time that a game show found itself completely at the mercy of one of its contestants. It's historically important and fascinating to watch, and I submit Press Your Luck, episode 188, June 8 and June 11, 1984, for the canon. Thank you.
You go first, Sarah.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I mean...
Sarah, do you want to start?
Sure, okay. I will begin. I really... Like, this is like watching a no-hitter, okay? Like, at first you're like, all right, whatever. Like, it's three innings in, you know, who cares? Like, anyone can three hit a, you know, no hit a team for three innings. And then, like, around the sixth inning, you're like, oh, huh. Well, this is more than, like, randomness. This might actually be a thing. And then it gets really monotonous, and the announcers are, like, not talking about it on every pitch. And then you sort of tune back in at, like, inning eight. Like, well, now someone has to get a hit, right? Like, there's a sort of similar thought process as a viewer that you're cycling between, like, okay, get on with it. And, like, what is really going to happen next? Like, it has to end, right? And then, of course, it did. Like, he tried not to be too obvious about it. But Larson, I think, identified $100,000 as roughly where he would stop and then passed it. But, yeah, like, this is sort of a unique experience in that way in terms of watching a game show. So this was really fascinating. And then, you know, then I sort of, like, disappeared down a rabbit hole watching one of the documentaries. And I think Tamarkin had some pretty serious problems, which we alluded to in the Television Without Pity book, that perhaps that cocaine-enhanced aspect was actually cocaine-enhanced. Seemed to have had a couple of issues. But, yeah, I was also, like, there's a lot of other sort of mid-80s business going on here, like the picture of the exercycle on the board and that someone gets, quote, two very smart whammy t-shirts as a prize, which I was like, all right, that's the bullshitty prize, like Lee Press on Nails used to be on Jeopardy for the third place finisher. But they come in two legs, regular and dragon lady. Literally, this was the marketing. But I kind of want one of the original very smart t-shirts, primarily because it's silent. Watching 44 minutes of this, like, there were no whammies really except for the clip that you pulled, so that wasn't so bad. Thank you, Michael Larson. But the booping and beeping, it just wears you. It's like a faucet dripping, and it's definitely not random. Like, once you've heard it enough, you're like, oh, I see. He's gamed it. So, yeah, this is a really fun submission, and, like, I don't know what other people are going to vote, but this was, like, really fun to do something different and think about it from a totally different angle.
Yeah, I agree. I watched the documentary that the Game Show Network made about the episode when it aired, like, in the 2000s, in fact, with my sister, previously mentioned in this podcast. So I knew some of the story going in, and I was surprised at just how long it takes to spin 31 times, particularly when you think you just, like, I'll just keep hitting 5,000 in a spin. Like, what are you, stupid? I mean, but you, as Sarah said, he had to make it not too obvious, but it still was pretty obvious.
He started to pump his fist like immediately after he pressed the button, but before the board had really stopped and lit up.
You're right.
My only regret is that we watch these on YouTube and that there isn't a version that would more clearly show the other players' faces while he was spinning, because I felt like the guy contestant that he was playing against
was
like excited and thought it was great, and that the woman was like, fuck this guy, like was getting more and more irritated that she wasn't getting to play. But it was hard to tell because of the quality of the video. That's nobody's
fault. Well, I think
fault.
That bore out in the interviews they had with him in the documentary, because Ed was he a pastor?
Yes, he was a pastor.
He was
Baptist minister.
Yeah, he was.
You're not supposed to be gambling.
Yeah. Here. And he is exactly, you know, the kind of person you think he would be, you know, like a Midwestern pastor, happy, go lucky. And then she, I forget her name. Do you remember?
Patty.
Man, she was having none of it. Immediately. Yeah, that guy kind of seemed like a creep.
He was a creep.
And, yeah. And it was like, boom, right off the bat. Like, yeah, all right, there you go. And I think she was right.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, someone who would buy a shirt for 65 cents. Like, I know you're unemployed, but Jesus Christ.
Unemployed ice cream truck driver. That's an SVU episode.
Completely.
At least one.
Completely. But it was great to watch. It's the longer it goes on, the more suspenseful it actually is. Because even if you know how it ends, there's still this slight feeling of like, is he going to fuck it up? Of course he doesn't, and it's kind of amazing. The whammy animations really are worse than you remember, and why it even had to have a voice at all. God, why? It was already a sensory overload. It's like watching a casino for a half an hour. Like, yeah. It's torture. But every kid I know watched it, including me. Like, it clearly was a game show that was
made
for children.
Loved it.
With the cartoon aspect, obviously. So, yeah, this was super fun. Monty, there's no question in my mind that this is a canon episode because it's the defining episode of this show and maybe the only reason anyone remembers that it exists. Dave. Yeah.
TVs, when you have 20 TVs in a room, how come they're always all different sizes? And how come nobody buys 20 TVs that are exactly the same so they form a nice, you know, 4x5, you know, grid?
Well, he was unemployed, so he was probably dumpster
diving.
Oh, I know
he, but like we're talking about Sherlock, we're talking about, you know, like people that have means to, you know, buy 27-inch flat screen TVs and have them on a nice little grid on their wall. Why not do that? Why not be the person who breaks the mold?
TV hackers do that too. They'll have a whole bunch of monitors just positioned randomly. Some of them are vertical.
Yeah.
A
few random things. Patty with this.
Let's meet our third player, Janie Leitress. Janie. How are you, Janie?
Hi.
Now, you work for a dentist of some renown.
Oh, yes. I've worked 6 years for a crazy Polish dentist.
What's he do? Make him crazy.
Well, he sings to his patients and serves them drinks to calm them down a little bit.
I don't think it's so crazy. I like that.
Why does he have to be Polish? Come on.
That also seems like his SVU setup as well. That like he serves them drinks and then he molests them after he puts them under.
Yeah.
Michael Larson is a late life Orson Welles stand-in. He is like about 20 pounds away from the frozen peas commercial.
And yet at the time, if you can believe it, because I watched the documentary, it said it was born in 1949. So at the time of this episode, he was not 40. Like he was doing some rough living, you guys.
Yeah. One of the prizes on the big board is bumper pool. And let me just say this about bumper pool. Bumper pool is not a prize. Your friend Johnny in the neighborhood says, my dad got a new pool table. It's down in the basement. You want to play? Yeah. Clomp, 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 clomp down the stairs. Bumper pool. Fuck you. Out. Bumper pool. Nobody's first choice. It is surprisingly tense to watch it, even when you know what's happening. Even though you know he walks away with the equivalent of like $250,000 today, it is really tense to watch. Like I kind of felt like somehow this was a ruse and he was going to hit a whammy when he got the two passes from Janine. And I think this was like the most money ever won up until that point, right? Up until like the Ken Jennings era. And I did a little math. This guy is still the per episode winner. Ken Jennings won way more money, but he did it over like 80 episodes or something like that. So this guy has like triple the per episode rate of Ken Jennings. So stick that in your craw, Ken Jennings. You know, the other one that was very similar to Press Your Luck that I remember is The Joker's Wild. But
yeah,
that's the footnote, right? That's like, it was like Press Your Luck, but nobody broke the system on The Joker's Wild. Anyways, like this episode a lot. Definitely canon worth it. Let's put this to a vote. Tara?
Yay, for sure.
Sarah?
Yay.
All right, and I'm going to say yay. Press Your Luck, episode 188, number 1 and number 2, I believe is how they named them. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
No.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has a winner.
Winner of the week is Brandon Dassey, one of Making a Murderer subjects, of course, namely the one whose interrogation, trial, and conviction prompted the justice outrage on the internets. Dassey has had his conviction overturned by a federal judge. William E. Duffin found that investigators repeatedly made false promises to Dassey, who is 16 years old and, quote, a slow learner. In the course of getting a confession from him, Dassey's legal team has maintained that this confession was coerced from the get. It's very obvious that it was to the impartial or the whatever civilian observer, I should say. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be set free. The state has to initiate a retrial proceeding within 90 days or appeal the decision, which would put Dassey's release on hold. And, there was a mention in one of the later episodes, sort of the wrap-up episodes of Making a Murderer, that he seemed actually to be doing pretty well in prison, that it, like, he needs structure, and programming, and he actually gets that where he is. So you sort of wonder how this is all going to go for him. But regardless, he should not have probably been sent to jail, did not have a fair trial, and Dassey's legal team is going to seek to have him released on bond pending the outcome of all of this. But this is a net a good thing for the justice.
I was impressed that the ruling specifically called out his terrible, weird elfin lawyer for censure.
Yes. I was also pleased by
flagrant
that.
Flagrant wrongdoing. Speaking
and this
of which...
Is all, sorry. Yes. And this is all season two stuff, right? Didn't they order a second...
There will be a season two, but that was announced several days at least ahead of this information. Right. So who knows? Maybe season three. I don't know the timeline, but yeah. Good news regardless.
Speaking of wrongdoing, loser of the week is Thomas Gibson, formerly a star of Criminal Minds from the beginning, I think, and if not, certainly for a long time, because he was in like
I think that's
over
right.
200 episodes, but he's not going to be back this season, or he will possibly be in just a couple and then get written out because he got fired. For having a physical altercation with a producer on the show, allegedly involving kicking, which is the weirdest detail. Like, I mean, if you can picture an actor punching a writer, like, I mean, an actor shouldn't, obviously, but you can imagine it. But like, kicking? Like, did he kick a person in a butt? In the butt? Was the person down on the floor? Like, how did this actually occur? Anyway, Shamar Moore, who also left the show this season, came out with a very shady statement that was like, well, you reap what you sow. So apparently this was not the first time that Thomas Gibson had gotten into it with a producer. So this was just the last time. So
and they had sent him to anger management at some point. Like, apparently this has been an open secret, and my first thought I had to say was like, if like the genders were switched, he would have been booted immediately. Like, think of the shit that Catherine Hagel still gets. Like, maybe she is a giant bitch, but I'm pretty sure she and or her mom never kicked anyone.
Yeah.
Maybe he can be on the new Top Gear over on Amazon. They can shuffle him over there.
Yeah. But what a weird thing to do. Like, to give up a job that's like, you're never going to, like, Criminal Minds is never going to get canceled, probably. Like, he could have written that until he retired or died. Like, just to be that reckless is crazy. But anyway, he'll be in TV jail for a while, and he can stay in the old Isaiah Washington.
And weirdly enough, there was some other news item about the show. Yeah. Like, somebody got, like, put in jail for stealing, like, $30,000 worth of stuff from the set.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, like some, like, half extra or something like that, too.
God.
So it sounds like this show's cursed.
Gosh.
And speaking of curses, do you know what time it is?
Fucking
game time.
What? Regular game time.
All right, everybody, welcome back to a new game time season. The standings are zero. Today we are playing Gold, Silver, Bronze from Chris Billing, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Chris writes, the Olympics are here, and there's a long history of shoehorning these athletes into TV shows. Name the program on which these Olympians appeared based on the description of the show or episode they were on.
Okay.
The Olympians' appearances generally fall into three categories: appearing as themselves on reality or competition shows, playing themselves on sitcoms or dramas, and finally taking the plunge and playing a role on a scripted series. All right. So the questions are in chronological order, and I will give you the year that we're talking about, too.
Okay.
That's all that's involved. So let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with valued guests.
All right. So here's our order. Monty, Tara, Sarah.
There's
42 questions today.
Okay.
Are we ready?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes.
Monty, decathlete Rafer Johnson had a long acting career, including Bond film License to Kill. Jack Webb was an admirer of him and cast him in the second run of this famous police drama.
Dragnet.
Tara Ariano, boxer Floyd Patterson, appeared on this classic Western, the version starring Conrad and Martin, not Smith and Klein.
I have no idea, so I'll just say Bonanza.
Oh, Tara, you should have thought of that one. this version starring Conrad and Martin, not Smith and Klein.
It's, I don't know.
Will Smith.
Oh, Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Sarah D. Bunting. Muhammad Ali appeared on this Aaron Spelling show on an episode where PI Dan Tana investigates the disappearance of the MC of a charity event, 1979.
Dan Tana?
Yeah. And I'll give you an additional clue because I'm feeling generous today. One of the characters in this show is not a letter.
In the show title.
Hawaii 5-0?
Good guess.
That's Vega dollar sign.
Vega dollar sign.
Back to Monty. In an episode about discipline, figure skater Peggy Fleming teaches us all how doing something well takes a lot of practice, and Lady Elaine helps determine her own discipline for damaging dolls. 1982.
Wow. That made no sense to me. Romper Room?
Anybody?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Yeah, Lady Elaine. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Tara Ariano?
Yep.
Kimberly impresses gold medal figure skater Dorothy Hamill and is surprised when her father lets her go to Los Angeles to train 83.
Different Strokes?
Thank
you, Kimberly.
Different Strokes.
Oh, I forgot about that. Sarah D. Bunting in a two-part episode. Richard Havelstrom, that is a fantastic name, played by gymnast Bart Connor, causes an accident that injures a young athlete. The boss assigns Jonathan Smith to provide moral support for the injured Deke. 1984. The boss.
Mm.
In quotes, capitalized. Huh. 1984.
I don't know. Charlie's Angels?
That's a good guess.
That's what I would have guessed, too.
All right. What would your guess be if I told you the boss was God?
Oh, Highway to Heaven?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Doesn't Highway to Heaven seem like they would have a guest star like that every other week,
yes,
at least?
Yeah.
Yes.
For Monty, on a trip to Atlantic City, Louise is desperate to meet a celebrity like gold medal boxer Joe Frazier. Or Charo, also appearing in this episode. George and Florence have different luck at the tables. 1985.
The Jeffersons.
Nice.
Tara Ariano.
Yep.
Jessica inherits a minority stake in an American football team. When another owner is murdered, suspicion falls on player Zach, played by Caitlyn Jenner, then Bruce.
Is this Murder, She Wrote?
It is Murder, She Wrote.
Right.
Sarah D. Bunting. Basketball player Bill Russell plays a crooked judge being investigated by Sonny and Rico.
Miami Vice.
It is Miami Vice, yep. Lawyer played by Harvey Fierstein, who's also in cahoots with the judge.
Wow.
How are we not watching that right now?
Oh, my God.
I'd like to change my canon submissions,
please. Thank you.
Wow.
Here for it.
Neat. All right. Larry Appleton, Monty. Larry Appleton is convinced someone has taken advantage of his naive cousin when he says he lent sprinter Carl Lewis money at a convenience store. Larry Appleton is convinced someone has taken advantage of his naive cousin when he says he lent sprinter Carl Lewis money at a convenience store. 1988.
Perfect Strangers?
Yeah.
Tara Ariano.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Jenkins suggests that the neighborhood put on a marathon to raise money for a hopeful Olympian. Her daughter Brenda gets advice from Florence Griffith Joyner, aka Flojo, after losing a race. 1988.
227.
Wow, Regina King and Flojo on one screen.
I know.
That's a lot of fucking badass.
No kidding.
Right there.
All right, Sarah. Figure skater Dick Button appears as an announcer on an episode where Brandon falls in love, but also serves as a distraction to Trisha, a skater and Olympic hopeful.
Oh my gosh, 1992. Yeah, I was like, no time traveling for Beverly Hills 90210.
Correct. Monty.
Mm-hmm.
Gymnast Mary Lou Retton heads to the beach for a special Olympics event. She convinces her old friend Mitch to mentor one of the teen competitors who is taking things too seriously. Her old friend Mitch.
Oh no, this one should have gone to Sarah.
Yeah, I don't know a Mitch. I'm going to say Saved by the Bell.
Not a bad guess.
Yeah.
Sarah.
Baywatch. It's Baywatch.
I should have just stuck with the beach part and ignored the name.
I had a cat who had the same name as this fucking kid. Haunts me to this day.
For Tara, yeah. ABC aired 9 episodes of the sitcom where boxer George Foreman played George Foster, a retired boxer who cares for troubled kids. This show was 93 to 94.
Oh my God.
What?
I mean, there's only so many things it could be called, so I'm just going to guess it was called George. Oh my God.
Logical.
Yeah.
All right. Bring us into our first score break for Sarah D. Bunting. A fictionalized figure skater, Brian Boitano, is referenced and appears in multiple episodes of this show, including the short Jesus versus Santa that preceded the series. You are correct.
Wow, a lot of serendipity in this episode. Okay, very, very close game. Monty and Sarah are tied with 3 each. I have 4.
All right, back to Monty. Terry Hightower, played by Kobe Bryant, is the star basketball player at Crenshaw High. He asked the show lead character, played by Brandy, to write an essay for him. 1996.
Moesha?
You are correct. Number 17.
It's pretty cool.
Tara Ariano, yes. Dan Connor lays in new tile in the kitchen. In a gag at the end of the episode, Scott Hamilton joins Becky's husband Mark for the National Floor Skating Championship 96.
Roseanne.
You are correct. Sarah D. Bunting. Basketball center David Robinson and Pizza Hut spokesman, I'm going to guess, I think, is in charge of QRS as he joins Ellen DeGeneres, Ray Charles, Sherry Lewis, Tony Bennett, and Patrick Stewart in singing the alphabet song. 97.
Sesame Street?
Nice.
Correct.
Yeah.
Number 19 for Monty. Swimmer Summer Sanders was the original host of this Nickelodeon game show that is like the classic What's My Line, but with more slime. 97 to 2000.
Oof. Celebrity Double Dare.
Incorrect. It's a show called Figure It Out.
Figure It Out.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, him. Summer Sanders might be the most 1974 name I've ever heard in my life. Yeah. Tara Ariano.
Yep.
When Peter becomes jealous of his new heroic neighbor, Joe Swanson, Michelle Kwan reminds him of all those mornings he drove her to her figure skating practice, 99.
Family Guy?
You are correct.
All right.
Sarah D. Bunting, Aussie swimmer Ian Thorpe makes an appearance at Central Perk.
Friends.
You are correct.
Nice.
Mr. Ashley?
Yes, sir.
Presidential candidate and basketball player Bill Bradley appeared on this Michael Moore comedy documentary series that was a crusade to expose corporations and powerful individuals, 2000.
God, I loved it so much. Why?
Oh, I don't remember the name of that show at all. The Michael Moore Show starring me, Michael Moore.
I think I'm wrong if it was 2000.
Do you remember what it was called?
I was thinking TV Nation, but that was before.
No. This one is called The Awful Truth.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Tutara.
Yes.
Larry has courtside seats to a Laker game and accidentally trips Shaquille O'Neal, 2001.
Curb your enthusiasm.
You are correct. Sarah D. Bunting. Two Olympians with checkered pass, Tanya Harding and Olga Korbut, each appeared on this celebrity competition show competing against Paula Jones and Darva Conger.
Oh, my God.
Celebrity boxing.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. That is impressively sad pull.
Yeah, this is when being a Bonaduce really comes in handy. Just kidding, it never does.
I think you're the first person to use the words Bonaduce completist.
That's my band name. DoocheCon.
Oh my God, T-shirt. Neela joins Tony for a paramedic ride-along when a mid-air collision over Chicago finds them needing to rescue the children of a woman played by tennis great Serena Williams. 2005.
Saint Elsewhere?
Ooh. Saint Elsewhere.
2005?
I don't know.
That's ER.
Well, I figured it was too
really,
early
Serena?
For Chicago Med. It's not my fault all the hospital shows are in Chicago.
Is that one of the helicopter episodes that the crocodile that keeps on coming back for Romano?
I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. Tara Ariano. Reese pretends to be a vegetarian in an attempt to impress Carrie, played by figure skater Tara Lipinski. There is also cattle trampling motorcycles. 06.
Are shows in here more than once?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Well, I'm going to say Family Guy anyway, because I don't have a better guess.
Incorrect. Malcolm in the Middle. Malcolm in the Middle.
Whoa,
all right. Geez. Sarah D. Bunting, gymnast Nastia
Lukin,
makes the moves on Chuck Bass at the school's annual snowflake ball. 08.
She does? Weird. Yeah. Gossip Girl.
Right.
Correct. Monty. Runner Usain Bolt takes to a different track, appearing as the star in a reasonably priced car. 09.
Top Gear.
You are correct. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
In real life, alpine skier Lindsay Vonn started a Facebook group to try to save the show. On the show, she appears in the series finale as a secretary with a clue for Lupo and Bernard, 2010.
Oh, Law and Order? Wow.
She did?
That's a weird footnote of an Olympian's life.
That is adorable. That is.
All training.
Bring us into our second score break for Sarah. This British series made its final TV episodes... asterisk to coincide with the London Olympics. Patty finds tickets her ex-husband Marshall dropped and crashes a reception for middle distance runner Dame Kelly Holmes. 2012.
Abfab,
correct. And that brings us into our second score break.
Still so close. Monty has 5. Sarah and I are now tied with 8 each. Oh my God.
All right. And everybody has 4 questions left.
So it still is, potentially, anyone's game.
Monty Ashley.
I'm perfect, and you two just completely stink it up. Let's do this.
Taekwondo gold medalist Stephen Lopez was a contestant alongside Gronk and Rob Kardashian on the celebrity dating show whose mechanics were similar to The Voice. 2012.
Well, I certainly have no idea.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah.
What's Gronk?
Is Gronk?
Rob Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski. Okay.
He's a football player.
Oh, okay. And just to consistent with our mispronunciations during the Star Trek draft, Rob Kardashian, we'll call him, to even the playing field. We kept on calling them the Kardashians.
Yeah.
I know this is not the answer, but I like reminding people this show existed, so I will say Love Cruise.
Incorrect, but we'll give you a day point for style. That is The Choice. The Choice.
Oh, right.
Oh, God, that makes sense. That old sure. thing.
Tara.
Yep.
Artistic gymnast Gabby Douglas messes around with a floral arrangement as everyone prepares for the annual Miss Mystic Falls pageant 2012.
The Vampire Diaries?
You are correct. Sarah D. Bunting. Fred and Carrie start a No Olympics campaign, but a hot tub meeting with diver Greg Louganis gives them a change of heart. 2012.
Fred and Carrie. Start
yep.
I don't know.
Wait, don't answer yet. I'm going to give you a little hint. Fred and Carrie, character and actor names.
Huh.
Playing themselves.
Doesn't help. Right. Sorry.
Anybody?
No.
Portlandia.
Oh, of course.
Portlandia. They had a hot tub meeting. What other show is that going to be?
Monty. Misty May Traynor is on hand to present a showcase of volleyball-themed prizes. in 2012 on this show. A show, and I will give you this hint, showcase, capitalized.
Yeah, yeah. Price is Right.
You are correct. Tara Ariana.
Second prize is two cases.
Yes.
Freestyle skier Johnny Mosley was a one-season host of this sports competition show spun off from a Japanese series, 2012.
Oh. American Ninja Warrior? Oh, God.
Correct.
Nice pull.
I was thinking the challenge when it started with that question.
Yeah, because that too.
I was hoping it was that show where people had to jump through holes in the walls that moved.
No. Oh, Wipeout? No.
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 But I know what you're talking about.
Vaguely.
What was the show with the fake dubbed commentary?
It was some similar, like, Japanese translated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The name is... I'll pull it.
Most Extraordinary Game of...
Yeah.
No, I can't remember. Yeah. Something like that. Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, skier Peekaboo Street. Is that right?
Peekaboo? Yes.
Yeah.
Was a contestant on this celebrity reality competition that put stars through the paces of military-style training exercises. 2012 still.
Celebrity boot camp?
No, that was one of them, though. It was just boot camp, wasn't it?
There was a boot camp, but I think there might have been a celebrity one, too.
Well, this one is called Stars Earn Stripes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Shut up, America.
All right, Monty, here is your second to last question. The USA Today sports blog ran an obituary for swimmer Ryan Lochte. Reality show with the headline "A Nation of Bros Mourn," 2013.
I don't recall that, but is the answer 30 Rock?
No, he had his own show,
and it was called.
Oh,
being,
that's right!
Was it like
I remember
being
the,
Ryan Lochte or something.
No,
like that?
What would Ryan?
What
Lochte,
would Ryan do? What,
yeah.
All right, Tatara.
Yep.
Artistic gymnast Michaela Maroney plays a gymnast suspected of murdering a competitor. Booth and his partner are not impressed. 2013.
Bones.
Correct. Wow. All right. For Sarah, soccer player Alexi Lalas was on this blessedly one-season sitcom about singles in a bar. Bruce thinks he has a chance to hook up with a woman who is into redheads, but... the ginger athlete's appearance ruined his plans. 2014.
I have no idea. Yeah.
Anybody?
Benson, the new class.
Singles at a bar, you say?
It's called Mixology.
Oh, God. That piece of shit.
All right. Everybody has one question left, so let's get the scores.
Okay. Monty has 6. Sarah has 8. I have 11.
Oh, all right. Well, let's do these last questions.
Where were you, Johnny Weir?
Monty.
Yeah.
Stan becomes head of security at a community college when the CIA makes cutbacks. Mark Spitz, Speedo and all, is the school's chancellor. 2014.
American Dad.
You are correct.
Wow.
Wow. All
right, Ariana. Harvey fails to land Michael Phelps as a client, so Scotty talks up the swimmer at a restaurant as she's desperate to sign him to the firm. 2014.
Suits.
And finally, Sarah, speed skater Apollo Anton Ono was a correspondent for this ill-fated show, accompanying contestants as they played the game Ticket to Slide 2015.
Wow.
Yeah. I know Tara knows this show.
I don't.
You do.
You just bet your ice? I don't know.
Nope. It was a very short-lived... variety show on NBC.
Oh, was it Best Time Ever with Neil Patrick Bullshit?
That is indeed.
Boo.
Tara.
All right, everybody. Well done. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We sketched out our thoughts on the best and weirdest of the world of animation for adults. Sarah presented The Blotter Presents Crime, the animated series, before we went around the dial with stops at Catfish, Take My Wife, The Great British Baking Show, Occupied, and The Tick. Then Monty avoided all whammies on his way to getting the infamous Michael Larson episodes of Press Your Luck in the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara took the gold in this week's Olympic Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
everywhere,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Wesley,
and Monty Ashley,
I hope you can see this because I'm doing it as hard as I can.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Not for children.
When you're in the Los Angeles area, we'd love to have you come to our contestant tryouts. Just write to Press Your Luck, Post Office Box 4303, Hollywood, California 90078-4303. Or call us at area code 213-461-0334.
Somebody call that number and tell us what it is now.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.